Well, welcome to another edition of the Gang of Four on Earth and Industry Radio. And last week, we managed to depress our listeners by talking about predictions for 2010. And as our listeners will no doubt know, none of us were all that excited about what's going to happen in 2010. So today we thought we'd light a candle as opposed to cursing the darkness and provide our listeners with some ideas or some theories as to how we think environmentalists and people who are in favor of a more thoughtful, robust approach to addressing the issue of climate change can regain the momentum politically, communications-wise, and otherwise. And we have our typical gang of four here with us today. That would be Earth and Industry Executive Editor Tim Hurst, contributors Jeff McIntyre Strasberg and Maria Sermamanka, and I'm David Westcott. And we're going to just jump right into it. As I think Tim mentioned before the call, we might want to share our Twitter handle or someplace where other people can find us aside from Earth and Industry. So I'm going to start with Tim Hurst, if you want to kick us off with your thoughts on how environmentalists can regain the momentum in 2010.
Thanks, David. So this whole sort of non-debate that's going on right now in the House and or Senate about moving forward with some sort of climate policy has kind of been bringing up some other policy alternatives for once. You know, all last year and part of the year before, the whole concept of a cap and trade pretty much dominated the policy discussion. And whether or not that's the right choice, I'm not really going to get into now, but it may not be the most viable strategy at this point for the coming year. And so what we're seeing now is the emergence of this CLEAR Act, which has, you know, been getting some pretty good opposition to, actually, from, you know, from people like Joe Rahm and the Breakthrough Institute. They're not real supportive of the whole concept of a cap and dividend. And Rahm actually likes to call it the cap and divide. And the way I was looking at that was, it seems just it was part of this sort of Republican strategy of conflating the name of the policy, you know, the whole cap and tax strategy.
Tim, for those who may not know, could you sort of describe what the CLEAR Act does?
Right. It's basically it's a cap and dividend, and essentially what it would do is it would tax the carbon as it came out of the ground. So producers would be paying this tax, and everything you would buy, everything you would do, would essentially cost a little bit more. But you would get a monthly check to help defray the cost of that. And if there's anything that Americans like, would be, you know, our monthly checks. So that's kind of the very skeleton version of it. Now it's a and that's sort of the attraction of the bill. I think it's the language is clean, it's simple. The reductions, the CO2 reductions, might not be as aggressive, yet those kind of things can be tweaked with. And I think, you know, I've always been a little concerned about the whole cap and trade thing. And I don't know, you know, I know there are some very smart economists out there who tell me why it's absolutely the right way to go. And there are some who would tell me why it's absolute wrong way to go. But I just, I'm sort of not emboldened, but I appreciate this opportunity to that we have to sort of redefine our policy options. And so I'm not necessarily seeing the difficulties that a carbon cap might have as a bad thing. I'm maybe seeing it as an opportunity for us and for our elected representatives to sort of start entertaining other policy options.
So entertaining other policy options, and you've got the Clean Act as a viable alternative, embracing alternative policies to achieve the same ends. That could be an interesting approach. Maybe we can shift gears a little bit with somebody with a bit more of a background in PR and communications, and I'll go to Maria Sermamanka. Maria, if you can share where people can find more of your writing and your stuff and share your thoughts, that'd be great.
Sure. I'm Maria Sermomanka, and I write for Earth and Industry and at my blog, MariaEnergia.com. And you can find me at Twitter. My handle is MariaEnergia, one word. I think what I would like to see this year, I think in order to get some sort of clean energy legislation passed and at least the momentum behind it, I think something that I've seen missing this past couple months is the cap and trade or cap and dividend legislation is complicated and people don't really understand what it means. They don't understand how it works. All, you know, they're worried about is this going to cost me money or not? And yes, we talk about green jobs, but again, you know, what does that mean? People want examples. So from a communications perspective, what I'd really like to see and who I think's been absent from this discussion, and but I think have the most to gain are renewable energy companies. We've got the advocates out there. We've got the kind of traditional people that we see championing this and the traditional people against climate change legislation. But I really want to see a organized act, you know, organized campaign from businesses. You know, I want to see a guy out on a wind turbine on my TV talking about how the cap and trade legislation means more wind turbines and more jobs for people like him. And I want to see, you know, someone in their home talking about the energy efficiency and how it will drive new technologies that way. And I think bringing it home to people and giving them examples and ideas of how it's going to affect their everyday lives in a positive way is something that we haven't seen. And it's been a lot of scary conversations about how we're all going to pay more for our energy and things like that. And there hasn't been a real cool-headed look at the benefits, at least not on a, you know, a very public mainstream sort of way.
That's pretty interesting. That's really interesting analysis. I think you're right about keeping it a little bit more simple and having some voices from people who benefit from a move toward new energy technology.
If I can jump in there really quick.
Please, Tim.
I actually was just published the results of a survey that I can't believe I didn't see a month ago, but basically, this survey polled about 1,000 likely voters, and it came up with the results that Americans, once they knew what the policy differences were between a cap and trade and a carbon tax, preferred the carbon tax by a margin of 2-1. So once they kind of knew what it was and were explained to it and kind of show the ropes a little bit, people were leaning in that direction. I think they like the simple. And so that's where I would echo what Maria has to say.
Great. Jeff McIntyre Strasberg, also a contributor to Earth and Industry. Jeff, can you share where else people can find you and
yes,
your thoughts?
Yes, certainly. I'm the founder and editor of Sustainablog, so you can find me there, sustainablog.org. And I also contribute to the Sundance Channel's Sunfiltered blog, which the address is way too long to say here, but you know, I can pass it along if you want to put it into the text that goes with it.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously, I agree with a lot of what's been said up to this point. I like cap and trade, but yeah, it's an incredibly complex system. I'd also like to kind of broaden just a bit outside of the policy realm, too, because I just read, I mean, a few days ago, I picked up the most recent issue of Mother Earth News, and Brian Welch, the publisher at Ogden Publications, had done a piece in there talking about more broadly about how and what environmentalists communicate, and that by and large it's really negative. You know, that our whole message is if you don't stop doing this, that, and the other, you're going to kill us all, or you know,
what that doesn't resonate with people.
Well, obviously that was his point, you know, and that for 30 or 40 years, that's been our message. And that, and I think this ties into a degree what Maria was saying, as far as particularly say with renewable energy companies and so forth. Let's talk about benefits. Let's talk about the notion of abundance through environmentalism and sustainability. To some degree, I think we tend to play in a bit to the rhetoric of that our opponents pick up on and really amplify, which is that, you know, you're going to have to give up so much to make these changes, even if they are, quote unquote, the right thing. And that maybe we should be focusing more on, yeah, what do we gain from this in terms of, you know, economically, and then that plays into the policy realm. But I think even in terms of quality of life issues, whether we're talking about, you know, health comes to mind. I'm blanking on other things here too, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
here?
I do. But I have to, and this is David, I have to, you know, as glum as last week's podcast was, I'm not completely sure I agree with the premise that all environmentalists or many environmentalists are so dowdy. I think that one of the things that attracts me to read the blogs that the three of you write and that so many in the environmental community online write is they are really very positive and they focus on innovation. I mean, if you think about what so many people talk about, yes, there's certainly the science and the science leads you to some kind of scary conclusions. But most of what we write about, I'd like to think, is pretty positive.
And that's what got me into this space too, actually, because I read Paul Hawkins' The Ecology of Commerce, which is one book that stands out that is pretty positive. That saying that, yeah, we've got to change, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to go back to a 19th century lifestyle, or, you know, that you know, we can still live at some level. We can have abundance, but
I'm perhaps plumbing need to, myself.
that we need to change to some degrees at how we think about those things.
Right. This is sort of the I don't know if anybody's read it, but the Nordhaus Schellenberger School of thought in their original paper, The Death of Environmentalism, was really about that. It was about this sort of, you know, taking ownership back of the whole framing of the debate and moving away from the sort of doom and gloom that had characterized it. And to be honest with you, by the time they actually published their book, I feel like we kind of turned that page, and they're seeing a lot less of the doom and gloom, yet it's hard to avoid. Like David, you said, the science isn't pretty. And so if we you know, stopped believing in science, maybe we could paint a rosier picture.
Well, the science is only the science is only ugly if we choose to do nothing about it. I think that what the, you know, and it's thanks for the segue, and I'll try to share what I was going to bring to the table is, you know, the I think embracing new approaches and looking at new sort of campaigns and talking about innovation and jobs and being more upbeat are absolutely right. I think we do kind of have to get back to basics and explain why this is important. You know, there's been a lot of noise on the other side and a lot of distractions on the other side, and you know, they have quite rightfully pointed to angry finger wagging people who, you know, have made some mistakes along the way. But, you know, I think we have to broaden the coalition a little bit. We have to demonstrate, take ourselves out of our own shoes for a little bit and try to appreciate what people from other perspectives see about this discussion. And so when you talk about going to people of faith and making – and this is something that I spoke with Jeff about
that's offline.
That's
right. We did.
You know, embracing groups of, you know, people of faith who have a spiritual and a scriptural justification for environmentalism, or looking at venture capitalists who are looking for new investment opportunities. And I know that's something Maria was touching on. you know, to try to explain to people that there's something in it for all of us. But we really do have to get back to basics and explain why this issue is important. And we need to work with scientists or who can help make that case for us. Marie?
And I think what you were saying, David, about broadening the tent and stuff, I think we were there. I mean, I think, you know, in the past, a lot of faith groups have, you know, come out in support of doing something about climate change and things like that, and business has as well. And I feel like we kind of just need to re-energize that again, because I think now that we're getting into the details of how exactly we do this, it's going to get obviously more complicated and more confusing. And so I think people, we just need to all be kind of reminded of keeping our eye on the prize here. And along those same lines, about a little less than 2 weeks ago, I don't know if you guys saw that Frank Luntz, the Republican word strategist guru, came out with a new study on basically how to talk about climate change. It's really interesting. Folks can find it. Environmental Defense has it posted on their site. It's also Mother Jones has an article about it that references it as well. And just talks a lot about what we've been saying, too, that keeping it positive. And it's about healthier jobs, American jobs, cleaner, more efficient technology versus, you know, these kind of more vague terms like green jobs and carbon neutral and things like that.
Well, I also think it's about appealing to people in sort of more personal terms. You know, you talk about Frank Luntz and you talk about opinion research and pollsters and focus grouping. I know that one of the communities online and offline that make most of the decisions in this world are parents, are moms specifically. And they look at environmental issues in a much more personal context. They may not think too much about sort of parts per billion carbon and what's the impact of that, but they will think about clean drinking water for kids, and they will think about, you know, a clean, safe place for people to go, and they will talk about food quality and food safety, and, you know, to try to personalize these issues in ways that can get communities energized on the local level, I think, is as much as important as some of the stuff that Maria's talking about, and I'm sure she's including that stuff when she talks about kickstarting or re-energizing.
Yeah, and if I can jump in here real quick too, I mean, Greensburg, Kansas keeps coming to mind as we're talking here, and that is such a good example. I mean, obviously you've got a town that was devastated by a natural disaster, but here we are, you know, rural Western Kansas, very conservative. And yet they've fully embraced this concept of green rebuilding and redevelopment because it does play into their view of the world to a large degree. They want to continue to be in many ways what they've always been as far as a farming community and so forth. And so the concept of sustainability speaks to that. These are people who want their kids to take over their farms and businesses. So developing that in that manner is getting the kids excited, and you know, they don't want to get the hell out of Dodge as soon as they graduate from high school now, but come back to green and so forth, and be a part of that. So I mean, we've got a wonderful model right there as far as speaking to two people at that sort of family and community level.
And I'm glad you brought up farming, because the agriculture industry has a lot at stake in this debate.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people don't always realize that. And, you know, that's why you hear noises from the Farm Bureau and so many agricultural interests. And a lot of industries look at this in a way that we wouldn't recognize it at first. But I'm really glad that you brought up agriculture, because there are ways to address climate change in a constructive fashion. And make sure that our agriculture industries aren't, you know, adversely impacted to a great degree. And it takes innovation and creativity, but I also think that we can't ignore the fact that under the current system, the proposals that have been brought forth at Copenhagen and elsewhere are gonna involve a significant amount of sacrifice, because people haven't innovated in the past, and it's to me, it's sort of getting a broader buy-in on this sort of shift toward coming up with new ideas as opposed to, you know, well, this is always the way we did it. I was a steel worker. My dad was a steel worker. His dad was a steel worker, and that's what we're going to do. The country is littered with one company towns that went bust. And, you know, I think coming up with a positive way to pivot and embrace some kinds of change and talk about it in terms of opportunity, and explaining how everybody has a stake in it is going to be important. And then improving, as you've noted, Maria, improving the way we talk about it. I think scientists have such an important role to play here in explaining what it really means and pointing to real life examples that we can see right now that show what's happening with the climate. And I'm not sure we do a good job of that right now.
You know, I think I would tend to agree with you that the frustrating thing for me is that Democrats or the left or environmentalists or whatever this broad group we're talking about, we are somehow allowing the debate to be framed as one where we're not really, we're not big into having a healthy economy. We'd rather be living in caves and, reading by candlelight. And, you know, this is, I'm a proud patriotic American. You know, I might be a, long haired, funny looking dude, but it doesn't really change the fact that we want the same thing. You know, we want this country to be a strong, prosperous, powerful, and peaceful country in 100 years. We want it to be here. And I think if we can kind of take that back, whether it's using the sort of lunch strategy, which has some real benefits, or kind of building on that. Now, the whole lunch thing, I don't want to get too far into that, but one must wonder how much of what he released is strategic in his own right, or if it's actually, hard data, et cetera. I haven't really looked at anything but the articles. So I don't know what you all thought about that, whether he's being sort of duplicitous.
Well, you know, Luntz is he's fairly reputable. It's not as if, he has some pretty influential clients, and he's regarded as one of the guys on top of this game. And so, I think when he's got something to share, he's doing it for a reason. So I do think it's strategic, but, I also know that he's not the only guy in the business with smart opinions. So I think that it's something that you take with a grain of salt. But
My only concern would be the losing sight of what it's all about. You know, yes, we want to talk about jobs. Yes, we want to talk about security. Yes, we want to talk about the economy. But if those three things are taken out of context, they can mean whatever the heck they want to mean. You know, it really has to be kept in the sort of context of building a stronger, safer, healthier environment. So I'm down with the jobs. I'm down with the clean. I'm down with the healthy. I love all of that. I just don't think we need to not lose sight of the sort of core issues.
Well, and it sort of it brings us to another sort of point, is that there is no single leading voice for the environmental community. It's not as if, we can point to one person and say, well, this person speaks for us. As cool as Al Gore may be to environmentalists, I don't think he speaks for everyone. And, no. I'm sorry. I just don't want Leonardo DiCaprio to be my mouthpiece as dreamy as he may be. But, when I hear your point of view, Tim, and I agree with it, and I wonder, are you ready to sort of pick up the banner and lead the way? It's kind of hard when you've got an amorphous movement that's going to have to go by it. It's going to be grassroots, and they're going to be, local leaders everywhere. So, that's sort of where I see the challenge, because there are rather organized efforts on the other side, and they tend to take a top-down approach when it comes to strategic communications. And there are people at the top who are developing strategies and who are sending out marching orders, and there are people who take those orders and run with them. And I think that we have a very different organization, a different population, and a different approach. And I do think ultimately it'll be successful, but I think it will be as long as people are open to new ideas and open to bringing more people in.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the whole charismatic leader thing on Martin Luther King Day, and how he was here was a guy that was the face of the civil rights movement. And actually, I started writing a piece, and I got way into it, and realized I wasn't going to be able to publish it in time, that it was still sort of relevant last month. So everyone will have to wait until next year for that one.
Yeah, but you know, even then, he was the face and he wasn't at the same time, because civil rights battles happened every day in places all over the country, and individual acts of bravery and individual acts of compassion across the country led to a groundswell. And yes, it did take a leader like Dr. King, but you know, it's important to note that he wasn't the only one. And there are plenty of figures in the civil rights movement, even today, that will readily recognize that civil rights and issues like that happen on a daily basis and at the local level. So that's just my two cents. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts to share with the group before we sign off. This is a little longer than last time, and I hope it's been more upbeat and positive. All right, then. Well, go ahead, Tim.
I don't feel like hanging myself, at least.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah,
although I did write down long-haired, funny-looking dude. And I'll have to make sure that gets in the post along with the podcast. But
yeah, I'm actually going to get a haircut here in the next couple of days. So say goodbye to the long hair.
Take a picture before you do, and
well, I, yeah.
Well, thanks to the Gang of Four, executive editor Tim Hurst, contributors Maria Sermamanca, Jeff McIntyre Strasberg, and I'm David Westcott. We're the Gang of Four on Earth and Industry Radio, and we'll see you next time.